This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For the first time in New York history, a room full of people froze to death in July.
It's an unimaginable evil. It's the power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
No, it's headed straight for us.
Is something trying to get out?
Many things.
It's commanding an army of the undead.
I think we're all going to die.
Da, 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy!
Are you serious? Wait,
yeah. It's showtime.
What's going on, ma'am, fam? It is your boy, Big Arby here. I am in beautiful DFW tonight, as are all of my colleagues. We got the full crew here. We're hanging out. We've done 1,000 episodes now. And I feel like we finally got it down. Last week we talked about our 1,000th episode and all that good stuff. And now is when we start cooking. Now is when we get the show starts being good. So I think that'll be strong. So I'm
Mike
excited.
Mike
Schur
always says that to make a successful TV show, you should be able to make 1,000 episodes and throw them away, and then start with 1,001. Right? I think that's what he. That's how it works.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. I don't know who Mike Schur is, but I will say that Piers Morgan says the same thing, and that's something I know and respect.
Good. It's perfect then. Yeah.
What's going on, gentlemen? How are we? How are we tonight?
I'm great. I want to say thank you to the people that reached out and listened to the 1,000th episode and enjoyed that, because that was a lot of fun. Got a lot of positive energy from that. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you at episode 2000, hopefully.
I would say we're probably on the lower end of the continuum of like kind of needy podcasts. Uh-huh. Like, we love people that listen, and that's great. And we engage with the VIP people in the Discord, and we engage people on Twitter a little bit and stuff, but we're not too thirsty, which I will always give us credit for. But that is to say that it was still very nice to hear from all of you, and all the well wishes and all the funny bits and all the good stuff on 1,000 episodes. It really did. At the risk of being sincere or modeling or whatever, it did fill all of our souls up very much. And so thank you for that. The umbrella bit forever and all that good stuff. So, okay. But we're here to talk the new Ghostbusters. The subtitle is not important because I don't remember it.
And sometimes they change. So,
what is it?
Frozen Empire.
Frozen Empire. Yeah. I thought it was Revenge of the Fallen, but that's just on me. We're here to discuss Ghostbusters tonight. Have a good time. We've talked multiple Ghostbusters here on this here pod. One time we did one, and then Paul Feig came to, or Feig or whatever it is, the guy in the three-piece suit, he came to all of our houses individually and scolded us for not appreciating his film. So
It was top 10 of the year for him. So
It wasn't shockingly, the film he made and spent 2 years on wasn't his top 10 of the year. So you can never take that away from the film. And I wish people would factor that into its legacy.
This is kind of a cursed franchise.
I would say this
is in
the top 10 podcasts of all time. Yeah, I would say.
This is kind of a cursed franchise for us. Ghostbusters Answer the Call was like maybe the worst run of feedback. I think that gave us Grace Kang, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they got us some incredible emails. came from that episode.
And then Ghostbusters Afterlife is the one and only episode in the entire history of this show where we got done and the audio broke in a way that could not be fixed. So we recorded, Kent and I recorded an episode.
Oh, yeah, a dead episode.
We had to throw it away because it wasn't there. And so, so we'll see what happens tonight. I'm excited to find out.
The podcasting gods heard it. They were not pleased. And so it did not see the light of day. That happens every now and then, you know?
Yeah,
it does. Especially with movies like this. I mean, speaking of bits of the past, the one of Paul Feig where no one mentions the three-piece suit ever is one of our better bits too. Like there's gotta be somebody that's just like, Paul, what are you doing? You know, like,
yeah, imagine
he's hanging out
like,
with Judd Apatow and the guys, they gotta give him crap about the suits, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're with the boys, you know, you order in some pizza and some stromboli, you know, you throw on,
Rosillo, ID, right?
So right. Yeah. Rosillo's over. So you throw on,
hey man,
caps.
Yeah, I've got, we're coming over to watch the Rams game at my place. If you want to stop by. Yeah, exactly. Okay, sure. And he shows up in a three-piece suit. Yeah. I mean, you gotta be like, come on, dude.
I'd have so many dry cleaning questions. Like, do you have a guy? Like, do they pick it up? You know, are you rocking that? And I would love to know his pajama situation because you can't go from three-piece suit to just like your boxers and a t-shirt. You gotta, if you're a three-piece suit guy, you gotta balance that. It's kind of the nature's balance of you gotta balance that. So you gotta have like a nice silk set or something. I don't know.
Right.
I have a lot of questions, but, that's either here or there. This was rebooted and immediately forgotten. One of the COVID years, 2020 or 2021. I wish there was some way to know, but there's no way to know. From Jason Reitman, a director with a lot of early promise, a really interesting filmmaker, someone that has been, it's weird to say, like, it's not to say that he's awful, but like, he's been really disappointing. Like, since like young adult, probably, you know, he's someone that looked like he would actually maybe be a cool Nepo baby be damned voice of a generation type filmmaker. And then he just turned the switch off in a weird way and then he kind of had a return to the well with the first film. And then with this one, his production partner and he kind of switched roles. And he produced and there's a new director. So I think we're going to have a lot to talk about with this one. Ghostbusters, I will kick this off by saying Ghostbusters is one of the worst and more unfortunate film franchises of all time because it's such a good original movie. I do know that there's a certain swath, Little Steven, not of Springsteen variety, but of, you know, our friend group variety that do like Ghostbusters 2, but I will say it's a great early prototypical blockbuster that thus spawned a franchise, and then immediately we're all going, this does not need a franchise. This is the ultimate example of, and I'm not a sequel hater, but this is something that did not need more. And I would say this movie continues that theory. I don't need more. I don't need more remakes. Can I just enjoy Ghostbusters? I promise you, I will buy Ghostbusters every year for $7. I'll put it in my calendar, right, on Amazon. I'll just go into Amazon Prime. I'll buy Ghostbusters on November 1st every year and enjoy it. Please, for the love of God, stop making more of these. It's a miracle the first movie worked. Because of the accurate of it all, and we should just appreciate that miracle. So I've been talking now for 2 or 3 minutes. I'm going to shut up and throw it to Brian first. This is one of the worst sequels of the Ghostbusters oeuvre, but I don't lay that at the fault of this movie. I lay it at the fault of there just was not more layers to this onion. Just let it be. For God's sake, let it be. Brian, go.
I like that. I like these movies. I like this movie. Generally speaking, this is one of those where as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, number one, here are all the problems that I see with this movie. Number two, I'm going to fully understand if someone, if I look in the Discord or when we record our episode, our review, if somebody's like, this is like a bottom 10 movie of the year kind of movie. Like, I did not like this for this reason, that reason. Totally valid. And also at the same time, I'm like, I'm kind of having fun with this in almost in spite of itself in various places. I really like Afterlife. I think Afterlife was a lot of fun. I felt like it's not a great sequel in that, because I'm kind of with you, Richard. I'm gonna have my cake and eat it too with this. I kind of agree with you. I also have liked or semi liked 3 out of the 4 sequels that we've had at this point. Afterlife, I think, is a lot of fun. There are some questionable choices made in that movie that limit its potential goodness, I think. And then those are extrapolated out even further in this one. And Ghostbusters 2 is fully just a, hey, remember when we were the Ghostbusters? Wasn't that fun? What if we tried to do that again?
Remember that? Like, okay, that was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I really liked Afterlife quite a bit. None of them are going to ever, I think very, very clearly, it's very clear at this point, none of them are ever going to equal up to the original. Sometimes that should probably be enough reason to stop making them. Not always. Sometimes you're going to have really successful series and franchises that can't ever equal out to the original, but they all have their own individual highs and they make a ton of money and they, you know, whatever, we see new talents brought to the screen through them and all these kinds of things. This one's probably not really in that group. I'm kind of fine with after. I wish that if I had a perfect world for this franchise, we get Ghostbusters 84 and then we get Ghostbusters Afterlife, because I do think that it is fun to kind of see the legacy brand of that with those characters and the way that they were able to bring back the original characters. Doing it again, like spawning a second franchise out of that, it very quickly is already at this point is out of steam, and that's kind of in spite of the fact that I had a good time with 75% of this movie, maybe something like that. So I enjoyed it generally speaking, but I'm not against your premise, Richard.
Kent, get after it. Can I guess your take on this?
Yeah, go for it.
I feel like you're going to be more... And by the way, this is a very respectful disagreement on our parts. Sure. I think both of us can completely see the other one's point. I probably was too hard. It's not that these are like atrocious. I just find them very pointless. And I feel the nihilism drifting in on me. Like, why are we doing this? You know, well, say what you will. But I also see your point that it's like a fun world to live in, by the way.
I enjoy being in the world. They don't add anything
right
individually. None of them do. I think you could say Answer the Call is the one that tries its hardest to accomplish that. It's just a bad movie. With some weird choices made in how they went about that. Yeah. But it's not like we're taking what we did in the first movie and now we're going to build upon it. They all exist in the shadow, exclusively in the shadow of the first movie. That's why I think Afterlife is more enjoyable than any of the rest of the sequels, is because it really does play on that. It plays directly into that. Whereas this movie, Ghostbusters 2, the same way, and I don't really even remember Answer the Call that well. They're more about... It's like a reaction to the first movie and nothing more beyond that, I think. So, sorry, Kent, your thoughts on...
No, Kent, go. I feel like you're going to be more on my side than Brian's. That's my prediction. No pressure to be that way. Please be on Brian's side more than me if that's the case. That's just my predict. I want to predict that is the case.
Well, to rewind on my history of Ghostbusters, I do like the original movies. I grew up watching them. But I don't feel like I have any real attachment to them in a way that I do some franchises that I grew up with, like Alien or Star Wars or Jurassic Park. Or I don't know. I get way more emotional when things happen with those movies and franchises than I do with Ghostbusters for some reason. Even though I grew up loving this, it's almost as if they can do whatever they want to it and it's not going to change my opinion on enjoying Ghostbusters. My biggest problem with these new ones is that they've turned what was basically an SNL sketch into a kid's movie. You know, it's leaning very hard towards the kid audience. And that's totally fine because they wanted to reboot this for a kid's audience. And I think they're smart enough to realize the mistake of the Paul Feig reboot, which was you either have to...
Incredible. I think that won the best picture.
No, that was the other Paul Feig one, Bridesmaids, wasn't it? But
No. I remember reading online that everyone was wrong and Paul Feig's Ghostbusters won best picture.
I was reminded of that when Melissa McCarthy came out at the Oscars and they said Academy Award nominee Melissa McCarthy. And I was reminded that she was nominated for an Oscar for pooping in the sink on an airplane.
That's how Daniel Day-Lewis.
That was the Oscar. That was the Oscar moment for that character. Anyway.
Was that the scene? I don't remember those Oscars. Was that the... Surely. I mean, but it would have been really funny if they're like, and Melissa McCarthy for Bridesmaids.
I think I really do think it was.
Her poopiness.
Well, I think that one didn't lean in enough to the history of Ghostbusters and said, okay, we're making a straight reboot. They did have some cameos in that, which, you know, it seems like Bill Murray will do anything you pay him to do.
Yeah.
Which includes this movie, apparently, which I have some thoughts on. Cheap. But I think they realized, okay, people's attachment to Ghostbusters lies within that first movie. So if we're going to reboot it, we need to Force Awakens this thing somehow. Get some legacy people in there. Same universe. In fact, I think they don't even count that Paul Feig one in the Ghostbusters universe at all. I think this is technically the fourth one. Ghostbusters 4, maybe?
They're at least pretending like it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
For sure.
In the canon.
It was the one that was being advertised on streaming, which is hilarious. So it was Tubi or Freevee or one of those was pushing that one pretty hard of, oh, we got Ghostbusters, guys. And you couldn't find Afterlife anywhere. It wasn't streaming anywhere.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Super smart choices.
I did see that. Yeah, I did see that on social media of people saying this is the reason to have physical media in your house or to buy your own movies is because, you know, if you wanted to go see this Ghostbusters, it's not on a Netflix or a Hulu or anything. So you can't always rely on corporate America to supply you with your movie needs. So that one figured out, we can't stray too far away from that Paul Feig one did, I think, at least understand the formula of what made Ghostbusters great, which was get four funny people in a room, let them cook. It just didn't work.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, these can't really figure out if they want to be legacy movies or kids movies or a full reboot. You know, it's constantly jumping between the line of, okay, is this, Ray Stantz's movie? Is this Winston's movie? Or is this, Spengler's kids movie? Is it Paul Rudd's movie? It doesn't know whose movie it is. It's kind of like an Avengers of Ghostbusterdom at this point, which is weird to say. I actually enjoyed this one more than Afterlife. Interesting. I think it's because it leaned more into the legacy Ghostbusters, and they were a bigger part of it. But on that note, which I teased earlier, if you're going to lean on one of them, why does it have to be Aykroyd? Like, couldn't Bill Murray be the star of this thing? I mean, it'd be like, all right, guys, you get 1 week of my time for $1 million, and that's all I'm going to do for this movie. I'll support you. I'll do the press, but I'm not spending 8 weeks of my life doing Ghostbusters. Maybe that's the case. But Dan Aykroyd's clearly like, yep, sign me up. I'll be the star. I'll do everything. Yeah. I can.
Well, his family were Ghostbusters, right? I mean, this kind of comes from his family.
Well, I think it's his baby. I mean, it's his project, but
you know, this is the ultimate kind of Brian and I have a bit. It goes back to old Adam Carolla a bit of may he rest in peace, by the way. Yeah. You die and you go to heaven, and the first question, right, is always like, what's the meaning of life? What is this? Why was there suffering? Whatever. And Corollas thing was always, was John Mayer cool or not? Like, how do I, you know, like, how should I have interpreted John Mayer? Was he a good hang or a terrible hang? Right. And I kind of have the same with Aykroyd, because sometimes, you know, he's got like this vodka brand and he's Canadian and you're like, this guy, and he's got weird things about weird takes on Ghost. And you're like, honestly, for like two dinners might be a pretty good hang. He's going to fill the room with, there's not going to be any awkward silences. He's going to have his, you know, sort of Ottawa takes on Ghost. But then, you know, maybe the third dinner is probably where you go, oh no, I hate this. Oh,
there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I am. I'm pro, this is going to be maybe controversial. I'm pro Aykroyd,
yeah,
the personality, anti Aykroyd, the comedian post 1980, pretty much.
Yeah, he's just distinctly not funny.
Yeah.
After, but he, like, SNL, is interesting. He, yeah, I know. It's, yeah, it's crazy because he's one of the more archetypal SNL cast members ever. And honestly, comic film personas, right, ever. You know, right, there's not Bill Hader without Dan Aykroyd. I actually do think that and respect that. I think he's really an important, more important than he probably gets credit for, SNL,
totally,
person. But then he just was like, oh, I'm just, in 1981, I'm just going to turn that off and just not do it. Mm-hmm. I guess 1984 was this. So, okay. In 1987, I'm just going to turn that off and not do anything really funny ever again. And it's not so much that happens. That happened to Jim Carrey. That happens to Eddie Murphy. You kind of get unfunny when you get in that bubble. But Aykroyd's different in that it's almost like he decided it. Mm-hmm. It's like a different thing. He didn't lose. He's a fat. I will admit, I just find him very fascinating, but I don't want to get bogged down on that.
That's a really good point. I'm with you too, because it doesn't. In some ways, he's doing the Dana Carvey thing, where he's just like returning to his old characters. You know, with between. I mean, Blues Brothers 2000 was 25 years ago, but still, like, that was a similar kind of thing. But like, it doesn't come off as, to me at least. He might be the worst part of this movie in some ways, but like, that's beside the point. It's more just like, it doesn't come across as desperate to me, and it doesn't feel like he's like searching for the funny. Exactly. It's just like, no, I don't have it. Okay. Yeah. And just like, this is
exactly,
I'm just going to play a character. I'm not a really good actor really, but I do play this character, and I'm just going to kind of hang out in that character. Is that cool with you guys? I there's something about that I,
it's like intriguing. I find it like,
I sort really of respect, and I, yeah, totally. That's,
yeah, I'm just,
I hadn't, I totally put head that together until you said that, but that it makes a ton of sense as to like, there's a lot of stuff that he does in this movie in particular that should be very eye rolly. And for me, it wasn't. I was just like, okay, it's not good, but it's not bothering me. I don't know. It's a strange, it's very strange. It's very strange. Sorry, Ken, I keep cutting you off.
No, you're good. Yeah. I mean, he's got like four bits to, you know, he keeps going back to, he's got Ghostbusters, Blues Brothers, Coneheads, and he'll show up
with the fish.
Yeah. Blender of fish every 10 years or so. And he's, which good, is,
you know? I will admit, I mean, that's solid bit. Anytime you can blend a fish, I mean, you got to do it. That's an all time gag, right? You know, in fact, more people should, like, you know, business meetings, things like that. People should blend more fish. Funny, the Blend-O-Matic or whatever is great. Yeah, no, totally. He'll do One Crazy Guys on you too. It's more of a Martin thing.
Yeah, but that one's kind of cringe now, though. Like the old guy version of it is way.
But
more
I
cringe.
Would say, it might be, there's an angle on that could be, in a post Me Too world, funnier. Like I'd like to see those guys go to jail. I would watch their trial. Like if you did an 8-episode Hulu show about the trial of the Wild and Crazy Guys as sex criminal, and do we deport them back to their country that no longer exists because the Eastern Bloc, you know, Yugoslavia, or what?
And they don't understand why they're in trouble.
That would be actually a great bit for Lorne Michaels to produce and have the Night at the Roxbury guys too in it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
except Chris Kattan really goes to jail.
Yeah, you're grinding on all these strange women for 10 years. You didn't think that was wrong?
Yeah. Coffee cups with our names on them. Yours says Doug. Yeah, I agree. It is funny because the thing that's interesting about the Ghostbusters sequels to me, the Aykroyd involved ones is that, like, the attitude seems to be, yeah, I understand why we got to do this, but I'm not that interested. And it weirdly makes him more likable because, like, so many other people that have, like, great, you know, huge iconic films like this would be like, they sort of salivate on screen. They're so excited to bring them back. And he doesn't do that, which is endearing, but it's also like, oh, actually, he's right. There's not much more to this. This was, to me at least, a one movie premise. And I will say, Brian, to your point, I actually really get why they would make more of these. Not just financially, of course you would, but it's like, it does seem like a world that would have more to it. It just seems that the world is constantly telling us, in fact, no, there's not.
Mm, sure.
But I get the impulse. Like, I really do. It seems like this is like, oh, the Ghostbusters cinematic universe should be on like 9 different
things.
Right. It's aesthetically cool. It's
cool logo. Great branding. It's cool theme song. Yeah. Great memories, you know. Yeah, I agree.
But then it's just every time, it's never other than a few moments where you're going, this is actively bad. It's never like actively bad, but just every Ghostbusters movie I've watched since Ghostbusters, I just, oh, no, yeah, no. Ghostbusters was cool. For me, it's like, we didn't need to do this.
Yeah, it always seems better in the idea than the execution.
Yeah.
Like, I think this movie was supposed to be Ghostbusters 3, or at least I remember Aykroyd years ago talking about, oh, we were supposed to do Ghostbusters 3, and it was New York City gets frozen over. That was the plot. Mm-hmm. So I think they've been trying to do this for a long time. And, you know, if you had told me before the last reboot, oh, the next one is it's all the original Ghostbusters and New York gets frozen over, and oh, Paul Rudd shows up and you got Kumail, I'd be like, oh, that's going to be a can't miss. Mm-hmm. But I just think tonally it tries to lean a little bit more into the Marvel-y DC style of how those action movies kind of play out in both the story and in the way it's shot. I mean, I think it could have leaned a little more into looking like a comedy movie than looking like an action movie in some areas. I do like the special effects in these, though, because it seems like they do some old school technique with them. And I thought the main villain, I guess, or ghost, that was like the Longhorn thing, I thought that looked awesome. Like, I thought the creature design on this was really strong.
Agree.
And Slimer. It's cool to see. Slimer's always cool. It's cool to see Slimer. I think
something you said earlier, a little bit earlier, Kent, is really smart on this. I think part of the problem, as far as the narrative structure goes, is the Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon situation. Because
yes,
I love both of those actors, genuinely, both great actors, and I always love when Paul Rudd shows up. When you're trying to bridge the movie across three different generations, that really starts, then you really are playing the kind of tug of war for screen time and story development and all that kind of stuff. If it's just Grandpa Stans is teaching the kids how to be Ghostbusters or whatever, it allows for a little more space and a little more room. I thought that wasn't a problem for me in the first one because the old school Ghostbusters are really only in the movie in the last 5 minutes. And so you're not jumping back and forth between three generations. You're doing two. It would be an easier sort of torch passing situation if you weren't also trying to half pass the torch to Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon, and then also half pass the torch to the kids and stuff. And
doesn't it feel like that's like a backup plan? Like, the next movie, they can just be like, oh, Paul Rudd was friends with Jack Black this whole time, and now he's right, in the ghost. You know, it's like they could just kind of gives him a lot of options after Aykroyd's like, I'm out, and then Murray decides
to do it. Or the kids are like, actually, we don't want to work with these kids.
Well, I think it's because they probably don't think that, I mean, it's my opinion. Finn Wolfhard, I love you, bro, but I mean, I don't think he could lead a movie like this, and neither can McKenna Grace. Yeah. So they needed like a leading
Family Situation,
like a leading actor to kind of pull the story along that wasn't one of the two kids and wasn't mm-hmm. Dan Aykroyd. So that's what they're left with.
No, 100%. 100%.
And they have Paul Rudd, but it's like that role is.
Yeah.
You know.
To your point earlier, reasons. Richard, on why do they keep doing this? I'm literally at the point where I think you could give Sony the option and say, you either can make four Ghostbusters movies, you have the IP of Ghostbusters, or you can make four Christopher Nolan movies. I think they would take the gamble on Ghostbusters. Like, I really think
they love it.
IP yeah. is that valuable in Hollywood. The illusion of what this could be, the next $1 billion whatever, that they'll take that over any like creative and that, person.
That licensable logo. For sure.
Yes, right. That like yeah. they'll take that over the risk of any creative person coming up with a great idea that's going to be, funny. Even though like the track record might be great, like they'll take the known commodity. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, like what known commodity is this?
See how.
What metric out there are they looking at that's like, man, we really need to make another one? Like, are the toys flying off the shelves? Is there a huge demand for like? There's got to be some, is the Facebook group got millions of people in it or something that, you know, where are they justifying?
Yeah, I think it is a known commodity. And the best thing about Ghostbusters is that original movie is an iconic comedy from this era and is actually still funny too. Whereas a lot of 80s movies really aren't. The second biggest thing it has going for it is the freaking logo. And the logo, I mean, I have a logo, one of the logo stickers on my laptop. The logo, the branding of this franchise is A, really cool, and B, just is an immediate nostalgia pull for anybody who sees it. And I think that tricks you into thinking that this franchise is like maybe a step down from Star Wars, you know, right. or something like that. And it's not. That has never been the reality of what this, and you know, this franchise
they're made
is.
It really weird times too. That's yes. the thing. It's like they have the perception of like, hey, we make one of these every 5 years. There's a new Ghostbusters. That's sort of the attitude that they have. But then it's like, okay, 84, 89, 2021, right in the middle of COVID and right. 2024, you know, it's like right, in 2016, right. obviously too, with the reboot, but it's funny that it's not like, economically thought out as a franchise,
mm-hmm.
But then it's kind of creatively presented as one. Like, oh, you all know this, and you're like, well, right. you could
I
be
love
born.
That logo.
Yeah, it's yeah, like you could yeah. be born in 1983, which, by the way, makes you super close to 50. You know what I mean, and not have seen a Ghostbusters for like until you were 40 or right. 39 yeah. right. in the theaters because you were. Four when the first one came out. What, you know what I mean? Like, there's all this, right. it's really treated as like, well, you all know this sort of.
I'm honestly.
Creatively. And it's like, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was number one at the it was in 4,300 theaters and it made just over 40 million, mm-hmm. I think, opening weekend. I don't know if that's a success anymore. I don't know if anyone does. But I think it speaks to maybe the lack of competition in a lot of ways, but this was like a very, everything I saw on social media about this, like they'd show a new poster, you know, you look at the comments on Instagram. This is one of the only franchises I can remember that just everybody seems to be like, why are they doing this online? Mm-hmm. And this is not a bad movie in my opinion. This yeah. is perfectly fine. You know, kid wants to watch this. I mean, they're lazy. Dude. Oh, I mean, it's totally lazy, like, have an IP, come up with a script and do it, but of the ones we've seen that are like that, this was better than so many of the reboots and sequels we've seen, and even some of the, like, DC, like, actual, like, we're spending actual money on this type yeah. of stuff. I thought it was perfectly harmless, fine movie. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with
it that. It is the hard, like... I do kind of hate the idea of this because I don't think the market was asking for it. Not necessarily financially, but like creatively, you know, it's not like anything I was really asking for. But this isn't like one of those things like, Matta Webb, where we can fill an hour just.
Sure.
This is something nobody will remember happened. This is Men in Black International. Men in Black 4 or whatever it was, the one with Brolin. Like, okay, everyone, mm-hmm. yeah. Maybe some people are upset it came out. Oh, I like the original more. 2 weeks later, no one thinks about it again. I feel like this is going to be very similar.
100% to that point. It's so funny. I have two friends, and shout out to Brian Duncan and Christian Caprellian, if you're listening, because I know you guys do. I agree with you on that. If this was Afterlife, I'd be like, yeah, cool. But Afterlife came out, and it was forgettable, like we talked about. Not bad forgettable, but just sort of like, oh, yeah, Paul Bradley goes, yeah, cool. But when the trailer launched for this, I got two texts from people that listen to our show who are quasi plugged into movies. Maybe they miss some stuff, whatever. They got kids, they got lives. And they said, like, oh my God, they're doing a Ghostbusters sequel about this movie. And I was like, guys, bros. And this was not a group text. These were two individual texts. And I was like, which is funny because actually I met these guys because we all lived on the same street. Guys, this is a sequel to a sequel that you guys just missed and forgot about in 2021. And it's like, to be forgettable twice is the kind of, sin of this movie. It's like, I'll forgive it once. The fact that you made a approachable, decent, fine, quasi-interesting, but forgettable Ghostbusters movie in 2021, that's fine. I accept that exists. It didn't disgrace the legacy of the sainted logo. But then that when you double down on that, even if it's still the same thing, it's just like, all right, guys, how many times are we going to do
it? For me, the bar for making the sequel was like, oh, if this makes over $200 million total, oh, it made $203, we're making a sequel. Like,
exactly.
It's like people really wanted this. They really thought, like, people loved that first one. We got to make another one. And people, I guess, accepted it enough or didn't complain loud enough about the first one for them to make the next one or think that the next one was something. I think they probably, when they made Afterlife, plan on doing a trilogy. That's what I would probably guess, but who knows?
And then what this dude was like, it didn't lose you money.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it made total $203 million. I mean, they couldn't have made much on that.
No, they couldn't, but they didn't lose money. And that, to Richard's point, and the smart things here, there's a lot of dumb things that Sony does, generally speaking.
This cost $100 million
to make, and it came out at the perfect time because there isn't a lot of competition, to your point, Kent. And it feels like the kind of movie that you get in the pre-blockbuster season. And that it's like a primer for, oh, right, hey. Planet of the Apes movie's coming out in a few weeks. That's cool. Oh, Godzilla? But, cool. Yeah, I'll see that next week. It feels like it doesn't quite qualify in that blockbuster circle kind of movie, but it feels like the primer for that. It's gonna even out at the end of the day. It'll make a little bit of money.
I don't know if it will, to be honest. Not,
I mean, at $100 million, I don't think it's gotten released.
It's
everywhere
got it so far. I think it's. It made $1 million more than the first one made opening weekend. So it'd probably make a tad bit more if it stays on pace.
But I just don't think the legs are as there as they were even in 2021. Maybe. I mean, I'm not. And again, that's not the reason you say no to this.
King Kong's this weekend, so King Kong might hit some of that audience. I don't know.
So this is sitting right now, 52 domestic, 16 international. It's at 68 right now. We'll see.
Yeah.
To all of our points, there are the logo and the, you can go to Hot Topic and sell t-shirts and all the stuff you want to do, right? So there's other
great Halloween costumes. Yeah. Like great, the jumpsuits. It's all great.
Well, that's
the Ecto one is super cool.
In a vacuum, I absolutely totally agree with you. I think it's a good release window. I think it was smart. The budget's not, they didn't spend $250 million on this.
Right.
I agree with you completely, but it's like every time I see one of these, it's like, why is this not in October?
That's true.
That's the only critique. Yeah. I agree with you more than I agree with me, but my only pushback would be like, this should be, cause like you could get some Halloween push off this maybe and goose another $25 million out of it, but whatever. I mean, we'll see. But I do think this one will end up losing maybe a little money. Not on the $100 million, but if you marketing and whatever, let's say it costs $175 total. it's not going to be a bomb. Yeah, it's not a bomb, but I think it might land at like 167 or something. You know what I mean? Like it'll be like, oh yeah, that happened. And it's not going to bankrupt Sony, but something will at some point. That's what Venom 3
for. Kraven the Hunter, probably.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Got plenty of more chances at this.
Exactly. Of all the characters they brought back in this, can we get Rick Moranis? He's like my favorite.
He wants to act, man. I think he gets the call every time. I don't think he wants to do it.
They call him and he doesn't want to do this?
He doesn't act. Yeah,
I think he does stuff, doesn't he? Or something.
No, his wife.
He's got like two voice credits in the last like 25 years.
His wife.
Didn't he come and do a bunch of podcasts recently and say like, I'm ready to work. Just call me.
Because he also got assaulted in New York. Remember that a couple years ago?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Again, true. He talked a lot of crap. Like he was talking about that the Mavs title was kind of fake to me, and right. bro, like, you know what I mean?
Had to let him know.
It's like you don't know
DeSean. Classic Raptors fan.
You don't know Sean Marion to me. To me. And so I had to teach Rick a little bit. I dog walked him up and down that subway, and I taught him a lesson or two.
Now he knows.
Now he knows. All right. Should we grade this out?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I will say, as harmless as this is, the plot with the Spangler's daughter and the ghost friend lover was maybe the dumbest, most pointless thing that's ever happened in this franchise.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was rolling my eyes in the moment. I've thought about it a little bit. I don't think that the plot point is all that bad. I think that there's two things. One, it is so poorly developed to that point that when she's like, oh, by the way, I can turn myself into a ghost, you're just like, wait, what? It feels very much like in order to make it feels like they started with the conclusion and wrote backwards on how to get to, okay, we got to figure out how to get Caracas or whatever the ghost's name. We got to figure out how to get him out. Well, he can only control ghosts. Okay, how can we? And then they walked it back to this point where she, and as a result, it feels so contrived and MacGuffin-y and no, like, and comes out of nowhere too, just completely, like, just like, hey, by the way, I can turn myself into a ghost for like 5 minutes.
And I will,
oh, okay, what? And then we're just doing it. Oh, okay, all right. We're going right into this thing. It was like, there's no, you don't want to mention that in the first 20 minutes, you know, or something. Just like, here's a callback that's coming later or something like that. Nope, we're just going, okay, all right, fine, all right, get it. It very, very bad writing on that.
It's, I mean, the original Ghostbusters, it's almost like a Seinfeld level of no sentimentality, no emotion. And these are just over the top with sentimentality and emotion. Mm-hmm. So it's a very hard, I don't know. It's like taking a 180 in terms of the tone of these. Mm-hmm. Because the first ones are just so, I mean, it's just dudes walking around, hanging, killing ghosts, just vibing, you know? And these are like, my parents that's are like, dying, you know?
That's your dream bachelor party.
I mean, those first movies, you tell me you wouldn't want to hang out with those four, like in the mid-80s. I mean, in New York, seems like...
Heck yeah. You're in New York, we're just vibing out, broing down.
Hunting ghosts.
Harold Ramis still around, you know, to pop some jokes.
Yeah.
All right. I'll grade this one.
Actually, Kent, I think that's actually a really good point. I really do. I think tonally that is the issue. Is like, I'm going to try to sum this up real quick.
He's trying to tug at the heartstrings a little too much.
Ghostbusters 1 is a completely shallow and great movie. And it's great because it's shallow. And everything else subsequently has tried to be a really deep movie about Ghostbusters. And that's just not what it was. It's just like guys being dudes hunting ghosts, you know, and Annie Potts. Young Sheldon's Annie Potts, I would say.
Just trying to get with Sigourney and
Yeah.
You know, normal 80s things.
All right.
I'll grade this one at a straight C.
Right where I am too, man. Right in the C. Right in the C spot. Brian, what about you?
Light B.
Okay.
Could is that bump B that minus? Down to a B minus.
Yeah. It's okay. A little Fantano with the light.
So an 84 light B is an 84, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But probably the second best movie I've seen this year, because 2024 has just been an absolute dumpster fire.
We might, like, if you're listening to this show, we could quit at any moment. We've been doing this.
Please join the VIP. Give us a reason to keep going and also to live, because this has been rough already. It's been a rough.
I agree with you. Definitely the second best movie I've seen this year, for sure. All right. Enough about bad stuff. Let's hang around. You guys want to talk about a weekly recommend?
Let's do it.
Weekly recommend.
Kent, what do you got for us, buddy?
Not a recommend, but just an observation. I just saw a picture of Seinfeld on, he's going on Jimmy Fallon Tonight Show, I guess tonight, and to talk about his Pop-Tarts movie that's coming this year. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that every time Seinfeld goes on the Tonight Show, he wears a black suit and black tie? Maybe I'm the only one to notice this. I think he's secretly dressing for a funeral every time he goes on there with Fallon as the host, and that's his, like, joke of protest of being on there every single time, but he's been doing it so long he can't say no. Maybe we'd ask him about that.
He is on next week. We are getting Jerry, so.
We need to get him on and talk some Pop-Tarts, bro.
Recommend only Hugh Grant with him. As you know,
I mean, I can't wait for that.
That's a great hang, right? We can just agree. That's a, like, if you want to, like, you're at a party and you want to dunk on everyone else at the party, you want to be at the Jerry Hugh Grant table.
We're just, Pop-Tart, it's just a shame that Comedians in Cars, he stopped doing it before Hugh Grant was a part of his life, because that would have been the best episode.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hugh Grant shares way too much. And, like,
she just goes down Sunset Boulevard. No, I'm just kidding.
She was right there.
Yeah. I have been going back and doing some Alex Garland movie watching, and I'm watching Devs again. And guys, it's so good. If you never watched it,
it is
the show. Nick Offerman is great.
Three or four episodes,
dude. You gotta watch till the end. I'm telling you. Man, it's greatness. I think it came out in 2020, maybe. Let me check. Yeah. Yep, in 2020. So it kind of flew under the radar then. It's 8 episodes. Might be my favorite thing Garland's done up to this point. It's Offerman is great in it. Sonoya Mizuno is the star of it. Stephen McKinley Henderson and Zach Greiner, a character actor. It pops up in a lot of stuff, is in this, and, like, really, really pops. So check this out. Devs, if you never saw that, and you're going to see Civil War coming up and doing the Ex Machina re-release, all that kind of stuff. Check out Devs. You might have missed it. All right.
It was Devs and Dispatches from Elsewhere. Remember those were the two?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, they came out the same week or something.
Devs is, we'll have to talk about it when you guys see it, but I think it's really interesting, especially with, I guess, what's happened since 2020 in that space that it's kind of talking about. It's really good. So check it out.
Brian, what you got for us?
Very nice. I'm going to recommend a show as well. Netflix is killing it right now. I got to say, I was verging on, maybe Netflix is the one that I care least about for a bit, and they've said we're gonna take all the money we dumped into just god awful movies with one star or two stars you remember or you've recognized, and then the rest of it is just written by ChatGPT and starring a guy from a Pepsi commercial and whatnot. They're like, what if we went back to making, like, TV series instead? Would that be interesting? And I was like, yeah, I would be interested in that. And they've been doing some good stuff. I've enjoyed. The Gentleman is going to be my recommend for this week. Have you guys seen this yet?
I have. Is it a TV show?
Are you surprised that I have?
I am a little, but not really, because the outdoor kitchen is so awesome that I knew you would get sucked in eventually, just because of that, if nothing else. This was awesome. I loved it. I thought it was great. I was kind of expecting it was going to be one of those that's just a background show, and I'm like, yeah, it was fine. And instead, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, every episode, I'm digging this. Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. I've never really enjoyed Theo James. I've seen him in a lot of things to this point, and I've always been like, okay, he's fine, but not impressed really. Very impressed in this. He's really good. I dug it. I dug it a whole lot.
Freddie, super fun. The Freddie guy is great too.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah. It was. It's really cool. I'm one of the better shows I've watched this year to this point, and. Like an immediate cannot wait for a second season. Really well done. Good distillation of the Guy Ritchie bit too, which is always nice, because I like Guy Ritchie about 70%.
He's on a little sneaky heater right now.
He is.
He's kind of in a late career. Well. You know, he's kind of found his. He discovered how to be self aware.
I would buy the Guy Ritchie stock and sell the Matthew Vaughn stock.
Yeah, 100. Oh, yeah. Well, it's almost like Matthew Vaughn existed, and Guy Ritchie was like, "All right, bro. Oh, all right.
I'm gonna
okay. Sorry, sorry. I was down Madonna Road and stuff. I was doing, but like, all right, we'll correct that, this.
That Henry Cavill movie is." Looks terrible, and I can't wait. It's going to be a blast. Like, it just looks like so much fun.
Didn't we text that back and forth? I was like,
I think we did. That's the worst show
I've ever seen. Can't wait to watch
Yeah. So I think we're talking Pulp Fiction in our, in the VIP this week. And Tarantino is somebody that for me, and I think for a lot of people, kind of routinely, like I walks up to and past the line of what I really want in my movie, and like goes all in on his Tarantino-ness quite a bit. Guy Ritchie can be the same thing. I really like Guy Ritchie at about an 8 out of 10 when he's doing 80% Guy Ritchie. It's that last 20% where I'm like, okay, man, I get it. Like, we could calm down now.
The movie was good too, man. Gentlemen's
it was. I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. I need to go back and rewatch it in the wake of
Sarah
of
watched thing. The show and has never even. Remotely,
yeah, it has personally. Almost nothing to do with the
yeah,
show.
I don't even know why.
Or, excuse me, with the movie,
it's a funny spinoff, the way they did it. But I told her, I was like, we're gonna watch the movie one of these mornings, because I actually think I can sell you on this. And you again,
that's right.
Theme to our recommends, our patron saint. We're gonna get him on. That's our next forte. We always used to say, like, man, if we could ever get Forte on the show, he's going to love us, because we really give a grouper. And we were right. I would say Hugh is going to hate us. Uh-huh. And that's going to feel equally as good. Right?
Like, yeah. He hates us, but he listens to every episode.
Like Hugh Grant really thinking we're dumb would honestly be an honor.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So
check out The Gentleman, though. Really, really enjoy it. And again, you don't have to watch the movie. You should watch the movie, because it's fun, but it has nothing to do with the movie.
And it's honestly a borderline, not even a weekly recommend, because it's killing it. It's gotten like 1.8 billion hours of viewing.
I saw that. They've got the three body problem they spent $1 billion on. And I've got like 2 episodes left of that. That may be my recommend next week. I'm enjoying it. But it was number 2 on their own. Rankings behind The Gentleman, which like 4 weeks in, which is hilarious.
Just buy a nice English countryside cottage, put hot people in it, and let them cook. Like, it's not that hard.
And have the coolest outdoor kitchen of all time. Yeah, that should also be part of the equation.
Dude, I did mushrooms the other day, Beckham style.
Oh, nice.
I didn't look as good doing it, but they were delicious. It's good. I've got it all seasoned real nice. Okay, so my recommend is it's a book. I think this is rare. I do this. I'm going to actually make it applicable to the show. Joanna Robinson, Dave Gonzalez, and Gavin Edwards wrote a book called MCU. It's a history of the MCU. And more so, it's a history of movies from 2008 to 2020, I would say. And thus a really, you know, that's a 12-year period where this is the financial engine of all movies. And it is funny because we now live in this world where that all seems really cynical, really duplicitous, and really kind of not evil, but like pointless, you know, because that it just becomes like the enemy of art. But there was this time where commercial filmmaking was A, good, and you could enjoy it, and B, funding all this other stuff. So, really enjoyed it's a really great deep dive. Brian, this is a recommend. I don't care if any listeners listen to it. You're going to love it. It's a really good deep dive. It's on all your platforms, your Amazons, your Kindles, and your Audibles. So I think you will all like that one if you listen to this show. Especially over the last 15 years when we've been talking about those movies, and it really gives you the feedback of the thought and the intention and the everything else in between of them. Okay. Nice. So this
it's on the list.
There you go. So this was the Ghostbusters Afterlife episode. We did it. We did a sequel episode that the sequel movie couldn't even live up to because we equally were. But hey, there's so much good stuff in the theater right now. Why do we? Oh wait, oh no. Okay. This was really fun, guys. This was. Yeah, I don't think there'll be a trilogy of these, but if there are, okay. I think that's, you know, we have kind of our different opinions in ranking these C's and B's on the movie, but if we, we'll see where this goes. But I would be shocked if this makes enough profit to justify another. But again, it's not a total flop, which, you know, in Sony's eyes is probably a win. Okay. You can find us at madaboutmoviespodcast.com. You can find us at madaboutmovies on Twitter, all the different stuff, madaboutmoviespodcast on Instagram. And while you're on the website, why don't you join the VIP club? It's a great community of like-minded film fans, all of that. We're all in the Discord all day, every day. It's all great. And you get a bonus episode every week. You don't just have to listen to this. You can listen to us talk about our retrospective episode, which we're about to do on Pulp Fiction. Okay. Until next time, gentlemen, I will see you at...
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.